B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Felt and Mass.
Oh, that's stupid. My God.
Children's song.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back into the program, Felger and Maserati, on a reentry Monday. Got Maz and Murray in our temporary Town Fair Tire Studios in Needham at the NBC Media Center. I am remote. We are brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, both on 98.5 The Sports Hub and the simulcast, which beams across New England and the country, on NBC Sports Boston. We spent the first hour or so of the program bitching about the Red Sox, which I know they're not a real lead story. I know that they're not exactly the heartbeat of Boston right now. I get all that, but... Well, they should be. I'll put it to you like that. That weekend against the Yankees should have pissed you off. And part of it was what we were just talking about there with Frank in Boston. You know, they add a few pieces at the deadline, and they make a difference. And now they get a few guys healthy, which is no one's sort of fault. And they look a little more representative. They go toe-to-toe with the Yankees, as they're wont to do. And it was a fun, you know, fun sort of dramatic weekend against the Yankees at Fenway Park. And that's what you should be looking forward to here over the next 45 days as a Red Sox fan, as opposed to playing out the string. And it sucks. It sucks that Bloom did not do more for this team sooner. And I will also blame the players. It sucks that they went that bad in the tank after that trade deadline and performed the way that they have for this past month, primarily Devers, Bogarts, and Martinez. They kind of quit. They kind of quit this month. Rafi Devers hitting 136 for Pete's sake. And Xander Bogaerts with his pity party for, you know, all season long, really. But after that Vasquez trade, pity party. And just a little bit more out of the players, just a little bit more out of the general manager, and you've got a good stretch run in front of you. Instead, it's probably too tough of a hill to climb. It's probably not going to happen. And that sucks, Maz. And that you should be pissed if you're a Red Sox fan after that weekend.
I mean, it was hard not to have that takeaway after that series, as entertaining as it was, because you looked at it and said, well, this is what it should have been all year. What that was, and again, I will tell you that as good as the Yankees have been in the first half, Mike, the Yankees aren't a 116-win roster. They're not. They played over their heads for the first part of the season, so they're probably coming back to earth now, and they haven't been playing well lately. In the same breath, I'll tell you, the Red Sox were not, you know, an 81-81 team. Like, for them to finish at that level is just not good enough. You can do, and something less than $235-240 million on the payroll. So, but the fact is, you come out of that weekend saying that was just fundamentally sound competitive baseball. That's all it was. You're not going to win a World Series playing the way they played over the weekend, but you'll be in it. And they were, you know, to finally have it come up now. Like, at this stage, with a couple of roster tweaks and attitude adjustment, really frustrating. Really, really frustrating.
Okay. So, Red Sox-Patriots mix, but it's a reentry Monday, so whatever you want. Back to your phones, as promised. Here's Bob in Nantucket for Maz. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to say, Maz, I think you did a great job doing color with OB, filling in for the great Jerry Remy. Number one. Number two, here's a question for all three guys. What are the odds of the Red Sox making the playoffs and the Patriots making the playoffs?
Okay, the Red Sox right now, according to the advanced analytics, are like 4% or 5%?
4.5% according to Baseball Reference, yes.
Yep. Okay. I think their odds are better than that, but I'm not even beating that drum. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about they should have had a stretch run here. They should have had a pennant race. You know, I know that doesn't really exist anymore, Maz, but they should have had a playoff chase. They should have been right in the mix. Their roster is good enough to be right. Even with all the mistakes that Heim Bloom made, they were good enough to be right in the mix. The players let you down. And it really didn't take that much for Heim Bloom to give you a little bit more and get you some reinforcements to be right in the mix. That's a disgrace. I think they're 4.5 out right now. Would it surprise you if they close it to 2 at some point? You know, they just creep a couple of games, and now you're 2 games out, and all of a sudden you are scoreboard watching. I mean, that's a pretty low bar, but I something tells me they'll get there, that maybe this weekend gives them some confidence, and they'll get hot and close it to a couple of games. I don't know if they've got enough to go all the way. They got 4 teams between them and that playoff berth, so probably not, but it shouldn't have gotten this bad. There's no excuse for that. I am sorry.
And look, again, Mike, just quickly, this week, Pittsburgh and Baltimore.
I mean,
look, now I know Baltimore's in front of them, but the Orioles are hardly a team that you can't beat. And so what if you go 5-1 this week?
Right.
I mean, you're right there. You're right there.
What would you put the Patriots playoff odds at, percentage? What's their playoff percentage on the Patriots?
30.
Yeah, probably a little higher. But yeah, 35%, something like that.
I was going to go 25%. I'm kind of down on them.
Right, I'm in the middle, 30.
Well, yeah, you know, like I don't know what I'm sure there's odds on it, but I think they've got a 1-4 chance. I'm down on them right now. Wayne in Yarmouth, go ahead, Wayne, on the Red Sox.
Well, you know, yes, some more should have been done, and some more needs to be done. But a point about Bloom, you know, in a way, this guy is doing what ownership wants him to do. He's going to be saving them hundreds of millions of dollars in some of these big deals that aren't going to happen. And he's bringing in enough fringe players in a cheap process. And overall doing, I think, what he was hired to do. Don't
hey,
you
Wayne.
Really think that that's the problem here? He's
Wayne,
doing
how much
what they
money?
Want him to do.
Wayne, how much money did he save in this year?
Well, he's not saving them any money this year, but he's going to be saving them a ton of money and not signing these two big boys.
Okay, so again, maybe, unless they still want to have a payroll at $230 million, call it, and they just want to spend it differently. They don't want to spend it on superstars because they don't like the inflexibility of it. But Sam Kennedy, the team president, basically said they're going to invest the same dollars in the team that they've been investing. He said that within the last week. In one of the interviews that he did, I don't know if it was a Nesson interview or what have you, but we're going to continue to put the resources in the team that we've always put in. So again, I would say, so is that good? So then they're not saving the money. They just don't want to sign the great player to the big contract. And so there's still the, in other words, the money going out is still going to be the same, but the team might not be as good. And again, I will tell you, I don't care what they spend on the payroll if the team is good. All I care is that the team be good. That's it. That's the only thing I ask. I don't like the way that they're going about it right now, but to me it's that simple. You should be vying for the division title pretty much every year.
But there's a lot of people who think that the biggest failing is doing this and still going over the tax. You know, when you're a tax team, or the way a lot of these teams, you know, view it is, we'll pay the tax because we have a chance to win a championship. Now you're paying a tax and you're selling at the deadline. And sort of punting on the season? No. Like, if that's what you're going to do, be under the tax and save one of those tax years so you don't have to, you know, all those penalties accrue if you're a multiple offender. And so they shouldn't have been over the tax. Like, that's what a lot of the Illuminati are angry at him most for, that he didn't sell more and go under the tax, which I don't give two poops about, but I think it is a factor in the business of baseball. Here's Joe in Maine. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Michael. You kind of segued a second ago to something I wasn't going to talk about, but when it comes to the Patriots spending and when it comes to the Red Sox spending, if the cap is crap, then why, like, and there's taxes involved, then, you know, then, I mean, Whit Grousback doesn't care.
I think he does care, but, I mean, like, what's your ultimate point?
The ultimate point is that, you know.
Let me give you the fact. Let me help you out. The Patriots don't spend enough. They haven't for a while. They don't spend enough. They can spend more and they don't. Fact. They could spend more and they don't. Fact. And they hide behind the salary cap. Fact. As most teams do when they don't want to spend. Now, I didn't, in there, did I say that the Patriots are cheap? No, I didn't say that.
Did I say that they spend a little? No, they spend a decent amount. They could spend more, and they don't. Period. When it comes to spending, John Henry's blown them away. Fact. Okay? Now, I don't think John Henry, I think Bob Kraft's a better owner than John Henry, but Henry spends more. And I'm not just talking about baseball salaries versus Red Sox baseball salaries versus football salaries. I'm talking relative to the league. If you look where the Red Sox have ranked in terms of pay or play role over the years, they rank way higher than the Patriots. The Patriots over a 10-year period from 2011 to 2021 ranked 15th. 15th with Tom Brady on their team. So they left some wins on the table because of money. Fact. The Red Sox have spent more than the Patriots, both in terms of real dollars and relative to their sports. Okay, so I don't know if that's what you were calling for or what, but those are facts. Wick Grosbeck and the Celtics, I think, have sneaky small market inclinations because they're not as deep-pocketed as some other teams. And we've talked about this too. They can't do what the Golden State Warriors do. They don't own their own building. They don't have quite those revenue streams. Wick Grosbeck is a grotesquely wealthy individual. But in that world of grotesquely wealthy individuals, he's, I think, on the lower end of it, or his group's on the lower end. I just don't think they're a huge money team. They're not. So I think they're sort of in a different spot. I don't know if that answered the caller's question. I don't even know what he was calling for. Do any of you have a thought before we go to commercial?
Nope.
No.
Okay. Right. It was just a way to kind of bitch about the salary cap. Back to your phones right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger. I'm media scum.
And Maz.
English is actually pretty good.
Felger and Maz.
This team is a mess.
98.5.
Seriously.
The Sports Hub.
Devers hammers this one to right. Judge looks at it, and the bat's flipped. It's gone. Devers, 25th of the year, and the Red Sox tack on two more. A no doubt about it shot for Rafael Devers.
Don't think pull. Let the hands react in. Rafael Devers reacted right here. Tyone hits a spot up and in, but the bat head just threw the zone beautifully. He knew it.
That was a bomb from Devers, but not good from him, Bogarts, and Martinez this month. Spear wrote about it on Sunday after that thing on Saturday where Bogarts and Devers really left you high and dry. Bogarts getting picked off in the seventh, and in the ninth, once again, with the Red Sox almost mounting a rally. Devers pounding the ball into the ground again for a fielder's choice, and then Bogarts popping up to end the game. Spear wrote that since in August, this is essentially since the trade deadline, maybe it doesn't match up exactly, and this was heading in to last night. So these numbers may not be exact, but it's pretty close. In the month of August, Bogarts hitting .222. Help me with the slash line again, Maz. What's the middle number?
On base.
On base and then slugging?
Yep.
Slugging .356. On base at .234. Slugging .356. Why don't they just give me the OPS as opposed to the effing slash line? Why do they do that? Can I just get the OPS? Like the OPS I get. Why do I have to sit there now? Why do I have to add that up?
Well, they could just do that by putting another slash.
But why do they do that?
I understand your point.
No, but now it's like...
No, this is what he's slashing. This is his slash line. Oh, go F yourself, nerd. Like, why do we do that? We've all now just caught up on OPS. Why not just give me the OPS? Why do they have to separate the on base and the slugging? Why do they do that?
Because they want you to know where the biggest deficiency is.
Well, but it doesn't matter. Just what the OPS is.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just. Anyway, Bogart's hitting .222. Devers. 6-44 heading into Sunday. 6-44, a .136 batting average, Maz. His slash line, .208 and .318. I can do that. That's a .526 OPS heading into Sunday night. .526 for a top 10 hitter in baseball? which is what I think he is, or, you know, in that category, right? He's a 526 OPS for the month of August, 8 strikeouts and 48 appearances in August. In his last 10 games, again, heading into Sunday, a 382 OPS. Thank you for not giving me the slash line there, Alex. A 382 OPS, Maz. His lowest over a 10-game stretch in a season in over 4 years. And that's, I'm sorry, like, that's kind of quitting.
Yeah, what you're describing, though, really, think about it, is the definition of dysfunction. You have, you know, a gap between the clubhouse and the organization where both sides are spiting the other. So the front office looks at it and says, you know, oh, well, you know, you guys aren't producing well enough for me to invest in the team. And the clubhouse looks at it and says, well, you're not investing in the team, so we're going to shut it down on you. If you're not trying, we're not trying. And look, the other thing is, I don't know, the fact that these stories came out in the order they came out in, I wonder how all that went down. In other words, the first story that Alex Speer wrote was a criticism of Bloom.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so then does someone lash back? Someone lash back at it? Because I've been on this side of it.
Someone lash back, right?
Someone lash back at Alex Speer and say, well, look, you wrote this, this, and this, which is all fine, but how about the other side of it? So what happens in the next day or two? Now you got criticisms of the players who've shut it down. And so here you go. I think what all this really does, again, it just illustrates the level of dysfunction that exists between one side and the other. They're just not, they're nowhere near being on the same page. Neither side trusts the other. And this is what would alarm me about the negotiations with Bogaerts and Devers, is like the acrimony that has existed now, and can they get past it? Like, that would worry me.
It's almost as if an executive, like, talked to a bunch of guys off the record, and they all sort of came away with something. I don't know. So it has that whiff. I don't know what goes on, but you do sort of wonder. That is interesting. Big story bashing the front office and their decision making, and then a couple days later, well, look at what the players are doing. Interesting. Love that. Love that sort of game. The thing is, both are right. Both are right. The players do deserve criticism. The players have quit. JD Martinez. Do you want his slash line in the month of August? 195, 244, 244. That's 488. 488? Is that right? His OPS in August was 488? Did I do that math properly? Oh, my God.
That's right.
17 strikeouts, 3 walks, and 45 plate appearances. He has a whiff percentage, that's the number of swings and misses per swing, of 42.9% in August, the highest of any month of his career.
Wow.
The worst swing and miss month in J.D. Martinez's illustrious career. Speer also goes on. It also wasn't hard to see how Saturday's game, when Bogaerts, Martinez, and Devers went a combined 1-for-14, including and with the pickoff of Bogaerts, undoing the promise of the group's only hit, and how that game could have been different if those three just did a little something. Speer also says other recent games have unfolded in similar fashion. Maybe the Sox wouldn't have endured a 5-4 walk-off loss to the Royals on August 6th had the trio not combined to go 1-for-11. Certainly the 9-7 extra innings loss to Atlanta could have been different had the group not gone 2-for-13 with 5 strikeouts. So we're circling back on the players, and I think they're right to do it, by the way, whether that's coming from people who've been criticized on the management side or not. I think that's accurate. I think that trade deadline hit, they dealt with Vasquez, and the players threw themselves a pity party, and it affected them all August. It didn't have to be that bad. All right, back to your phones. Here's Scott in the car on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, guys. My take on John Henry, he might have had to clean up his balance sheet. He just spent $900 million on the Penguins. It didn't want any more long-term huge debt. That's just my take.
Okay, thanks. But they still have high payrolls, Maz. So there's, I think he's still spending on the team, but there is something about putting too much risk on one individual player with a big contract. That's clearly something that he has shied away from, and it isn't just recently. It's been a while. You know, it's been maybe his whole ownership, really.
Yeah, again, like, so there have been a couple of exceptions along the way, and usually when they've been desperate. Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford, David Price. Like, and more often than not, they got themselves into a situation there where, you know, they were up against it and they didn't have an internal solution and they were starting to, deteriorate, right? But I would submit that, look, I don't think singularly those contracts put them under. I think there were other elements that, you know, that complicated things.
We've got Steve in Dedham. He's been waiting on Bill Belichick. Go ahead, Steve.
I want to know what you guys think about this. I frankly think Belichick is overrated as a coach. Just hear me out. I think it when he came to the Patriots, I think a lot of the players on the team were left over from Parcells. And then towards the middle of his career, I think, you know, he made some good, he made some wide, decent drafts, and he got some good players in it, like Vrabel and Rodney Harrison. But I think he just rode Brady's coattails. And I think, you know, that this is going to continue. Brady's gone, and I just think they're a 500 team, or maybe a little bit below, maybe a little bit better, but I don't think it's going to get any better than this. And his smug and arrogant attitude towards the press, how much more patience are people going to have for this when they're a 500 football team?
Yeah, I mean, you just said it. I think at 500, it's kind of a turnoff. I don't know how all you out there feel, but it's not so cute when you're 500. But let me ask you, okay, he jumped off. Is Bill Belichick overrated? Sure. Well, I mean, that's fair. Like, if you think he's the greatest coach of all time based on this run here, and then you look at his record without Brady and what's happened since, I think it's fair to say overrated. But overrated doesn't mean suck. Like, that's just where I draw the line. He's a great all-time coach. And in those 20 years with Brady, he was brilliant. He was amazing. But if you want to look at his entire career, pre-Brady, post-Brady, and say that Brady, you know, the Brady era is inflated and he's overrated, I'll grant you that. Just don't tell me he sucks or that he's not good or whatever. Look, I'm concerned about him down the stretch here, meaning down the stretch of his career. But the guy doesn't suck. You have a thought, Murray?
Yeah, it's that. I mean, people go too far with it. I think he's been, even exposed might not be the right term, but I think his reputation has definitely taken a little bit of a dent post-Brady. But to say he sucks is just, it's just not true. And I even pointed the first season post-Brady, that 7-9 team. You go back and look at that roster, that they got to 7 wins with Cam Newton, was something of a minor miracle. And they had good wins that year, too, occasionally, like the one at the Ravens at home.
See, I'll tell you what, I've reached the point where I look at it in these terms. Who benefited more from the relationship? In other
Belichick.
Words,
yeah. Bill.
Totally. That's how I feel. Bill benefited more from the relationship than Brady did. Because I think, and I'm not telling you Brady would have won 6 Super Bowls. Maybe he'd have won 2. Maybe he'd have won 3. I don't know. But I think without Brady, I'm not sure Bill wins any.
It's interesting. Maybe we should do that topic. Yeah, we never really do that topic. We don't really ever discuss that. Maybe we should take a crack at that one of these days. Brady Belichick. That's interesting. That's just occurred to me. That'd be a pretty good topic, I think. Here's an update from Big Jim, and we're right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
At the end of the day, it's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Murray's been reporting the latest in the Durant stuff. One league executive tells Mark Stein, wouldn't be surprised if he retires or cause a ruckus. So that thing is stagnant there. And we got a couple calls on Durant here, so let's take them. Here's Tony and Lynn. Go ahead, Tony.
I'd rather keep Brown than Durant. I think Durant is, you can't trust him to stay. He has injuries, and I think Jaylen Brown is a better investment over 10 years. And he just had a camp or something the last few days there in Roxbury, saying I'm with the community. And I think between him and Tatum, they kind of split up the difference because I think Jaylen Brown's more like, I'll stay in Boston and be a leader. And really, Tatum, he'd rather, you know, he wants to go to St. Louis and eat St. Louis pizza, be with his kid, and be out of the...
All right, let me stop you. St. Louis pizza.
Famed St. Louis pizza. Yeah.
St. Louis barbecue. I got it. What do they do with their pizza? Real quick, let me just pair this. Cam and Newton. Go ahead, Cam.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Okay, man, go.
Okay, so about this Kevin Durant thing, I was always against the trade idea. But this test is just, I mean, what the hell? I was listening to First Take this morning. If the Brooklyn players buy in, they are a very good basketball team. Kevin Durant is saying that he will retire as opposed to having to play with them one more time. His contract isn't the problem. I get it, Kyrie is a nutcase. But why would the Celtics want to trade for that sensitive prick, lose Jaylen Brown and like the younger stars for a guy that doesn't want to play with Seth Curry, Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris? That is a good team. That's a very good team. And he's saying retirement over something stupid and petty? He's like a 7-foot-tall, good at basketball prick. I don't want that guy in Boston.
Okay. All right, Maz, what are your latest thoughts on Kevin Durant?
Yeah, so look, I understand his point of view, and I would tell you that I get the sense that the Celtics are probably interested only in Durant if they can get him for a song. So and when I say that, I mean without giving up Brown in the deal. And you would say, well, how the hell are they going to do that? And my answer would be, they're not. So my guess is that they want to keep Jaylen Brown. The only real reason for them to even explore it, I think, is if they think Brown is gone. And then they may not have a choice, right? So, like, now, which opens up a whole different discussion. If they are convinced that Brown's leaving, Mike, I've said this a million times, I'll say it again. If the Celtics are convinced that Jaylen Brown is unsignable, then they should seriously explore the deal because the window with Durant will be longer than it would be with Brown. And you have the same issue with both players. Like, so the caller wants to say, well, I don't trust Kevin Durant. Well, you shouldn't trust Jaylen Brown either. I got news for you.
And
well,
of all the things...
I'm sorry, Jim, go ahead.
All the things that first caller listed about Kevin Durant that are red flags, the only one that I think is a real problem is the injury history. And given his age, and there's a lot of basketball on those legs at this point, all the other things... Too sensitive, like every other NBA player, basically, at this point. Lives on Twitter, like a lot of other guys in the league at this point. Could leave at any point. That's also Jaylen Brown and every other NBA player. They're interested because there's real talent there. He's still one of the most talented players in the league.
Okay, first of all, Murray, did you pick up the Maz Apple Watch commentary there?
Oh, I guess I didn't.
Yeah, he's like, I get the sense they only want Durant for a song. Like, I
oh
get
right,
sense.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? I get the sense, like, your toe itches. Like, you get the sense. Like, what does that mean? The sense. Like, I get the
well,
sense.
My ears start to wiggle.
So why don't they come on and say we're not trading Jaylen Brown? Why are they letting this thing fester and twist in the wind if they're not going to trade Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant?
That's a good point. Because what I also said was maybe they're having issues with Durant Jaylen Brown in terms of signability or what have you.
Well, let me stop you there because that's something not enough people have considered. What if Jaylen Brown wants the Celtics, but the Celtics don't want Jaylen Brown at the dollars it's going to take? What if the Celtics don't want to max out Jaylen Brown? Is that possible? We discussed this earlier. Celtics are not the Golden State Warriors. They cannot go hundreds of millions of dollars into the luxury tax. I don't think Wick is prepared to do that. I don't think that's what they're about down there. And so to do what the Warriors have done is twofold. The player has to accept, meaning Jaylen Brown has to accept being Klay Thompson, the second fiddle, and the team has to be willing to pay a second fiddle top dollar. So both have to be willing to do it. Is it possible the Celtics don't want to max out Jaylen Brown? I know Durant comes at a max contract, so you're getting two max guys there. But what if the hang-up is, well, Kevin Durant's worth that money, and we don't quite think you are? Like, what if that's the hang-up?
Okay, well, then I would say if I'm the Celtics, then you got to get over that hang-up.
I would agree.
Like, Okay, you know, and the fact is that if you want superstar players in that league, you got to give them max contracts. Just about every one of them gets one. And in fact, I can't think of one that really doesn't. Now, again, the criteria on what they exactly get is determined by the CBA, or the actual value of what they get is determined by the CBA based on what their achievements are and their experience and that sort of thing. But I would say, you know, pay one, pay the other. What's the difference? Like, you're going to pay money out the nose. If that's what the issue is, then, you know, to me, then what are we doing here? Like, I feel the same way I would about any other franchise in town. Now you have a championship nucleus, and you're not going to pay him because you don't want to pay the player?
So I feel exactly
like,
as you
what's
do.
The point?
I'm just trying to diagnose the situation.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
What's the – so Jaylen Brown does tweet, you know, I'm with my community. My community's with me after an event on Blue Hill Avenue over the weekend, which is great. You know, but it's not like he said, I'm with the Celtics and the Celtics are with me. I mean, if you really want to pick that thing apart on Instagram, it's well, what does he mean, my community? Does it mean, you know, the African-American community, the groups that he's working with in Roxbury? Does he mean the people that are with him, my community? Does that really mean the Celtics? I think it means Boston. I mean, he's sitting there and Michelle Wu is, you know, modeling or, you know, wearing his stuff, wearing his juice brand or whatever it is that he's got going on there. And, like, there's city officials all over, big-time city officials there wearing his stuff, and I support my community. My community support for me. So, like, I think that's what that is. But it's not like he came out there and said, I'm a Celtic, and the Celtics are me. He's saying something a little bit different, I think. I mean, I don't know. We could pick that apart a million different ways. All I know is, then why don't they all just end the dance? If they don't want to trade, if they don't want to trade him, he doesn't want to leave, then why is no one saying it?
Yeah, Mike, listen, that part of it is an excellent point. And I'm with you on that. I think you have an issue there of trust. And when I said, and again, I don't think it's unusual when you start talking about the dollars involved in any league with guys who want huge contracts. I think on some level the same thing's going on with Devers and Bogarts and the Red Sox. When it's time to pay the fiddler, do you want to pay the fiddler or not?
It comes down to the money. Yep.
Yes, always. You know, so again, especially in those deals, I shouldn't say always. You know, Tommy Pham, it came down to the money and never should have. But, you know, the Red Sox can't give Tommy Pham $6 million. I mean, what are we doing here? The bigger ones I understand a little bit more. But this is the price of superstardom. You want those guys on your team, you got to pay them. Now, if you can win championships without them, God bless you. I don't think you can. And I think that in the NBA especially, really hard to do. Anyway, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, that was it, really. That was it.
All right, then your long commercial-free segment comes your way after this. Maz has some thoughts on the new phenom receiver for the Patriots, and Murray does as well. We'll hit on that in our long commercial-free set right up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the place Boston sports fans come to get some positive vibes for their teams.
Anything but. It's time to panic.
Maybe not. Now, back to reality with Felger and Maz.
Well, the Patriots are going to throw a changeup here. They're going to break from the huddle and look to snap it, perhaps. Game clock at four. Snap to Hoyer. Bouncing right. Rolling. Throw to the end zone. Pop by Thornton. Touchdown, Patriots.
Yeah, they grabbed his shoulder. I mean, they grabbed his jersey.
It's a really, really nice job by Thornton. So it's sort of that scramble drill. Things break down. He's working the back end line. He sees Brian Hoyer in trouble. Hoyer goes to the right. Thornton redirects, goes down the baseline, gets a jersey tug, and it still makes the catch.
All right, by all accounts, the rookie receiver there, Tyquan Thornton's had a good camp. And he certainly, I thought, made a nice play on that touchdown. Good route. Broke it to the outside. Showed some strength for a guy who's a little undersized. I don't know. I like what I see. Maz, you have your doubts, though, correct?
Yeah, I do. because, again, I'm going to put these in terms that our friend maybe Colin Coward would, or, you know, Murray might. And that is that, let's say you've gone through a little bit of a dry spell. You know, you're hitting the bars on weekends, not having any luck with the ladies. Well, you get to 2 a.m. one night, and all of a sudden, a 6 looks like a 10 because you're pretty desperate.
I believe the line is, I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
Okay, so yeah. Something well, like that, Murray.
Or slump buster, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. Something along those lines. And it has been so long since the Patriots drafted a wide receiver who is even remotely functional in their offense that I think everybody is just salivating at the idea that they have one in Tyquan Thornton, who, again, was going against the grain there a little bit in terms of when the Patriots selected him. Out of character for them to take this kind of player. And I will say showed a little bit of promise in this game. I like that play, too. Again, for a guy who is slight and not very strong, his game is built on speed. He did get away from a defender, broke out of his grasp, and caught a touchdown pass. That's good. There was also a play down the sideline that Brian Hoyer threw to him that got broken up, that the defender got his hand in on, that I don't think he did a good enough job fighting for the ball on. And maybe this is something he'll develop over time, but Christian Wilkerson on a play, I think it was the next snap, was a similar kind of throw from Hoyer. The defender got his hand in there again, and Wilkerson made the play. So, you know, and Wilkerson is a borderline practice squad guy in the NFL. It's not like he's a starter and he's your second receiver. So the kid's got a ways to go yet, and I'm not totally convinced that he is a find. Let's see what happens. Early on, looks good, but I haven't even brought in the guy from Pittsburgh that Murray's been raving about, George Pickens.
Let's do it, Murray. When you think of Tyquan
over the weekend with the Steelers, yeah, go ahead, Murray.
Yes, I don't know if you guys saw this, but you know, like a lot of talk nationally over the last day or so from the slate of preseason games was from that Steelers game, and it wasn't so much the play of the quarterbacks because Mitch Trubisky looked all right. The rookie they drafted, Kenny Pickett, had a good game, but it's this George Pickens who was taken two slots after Tyquan Thornton. And as we all know, like, nobody knows how to find wide receivers like the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, it's the one thing over the last 20-plus years. Like, they find these guys in the weeds. And it'll just be kind of fun to watch them. I mean, I sent you some of this recap. Like, truthfully, it's been that way for the Steelers most of training camp. Pickens does something to stand out athletically almost every day. On Saturday, it just happened to be Heinz Field, against the Seattle Seahawks instead of a muggy Tuesday at where they're practicing. Of his three catches, one, a toe tapper in the back of the end zone for a touchdown, but the highlight might have been a pancake block that Heinz Ward would have been blushing at. So, I don't know, so far this kid looks like they've hit on him. And I like Thornton, too. I'm not looking at him like Maz does, like, well, wait and see. It looks like they actually might have found something with him here, and you get why people are geeked up, because, you know, N'Keal Harry was such a dud, and they can't seemingly find a wide receiver. It looked like the kid might be able to play. He's skinny. Like, that's my concern. Can he last a whole season with that body type? But it looks like he, you know, the speed's legit. The breakaway and the separation looks legit.
Right. So, but this is my whole point, Mike. Is it because the kid's really good, or is it because the Patriots and their fans are really desperate?
But either way, with Pickens, though, and we'll get to see it early. You know, week two, they're at Pittsburgh. You know, this is a guy you could have drafted. Hopefully you got the right one, because, you know, this next potential great Steelers wide receiver went two picks after your guy.
Well, so there's going to be three guys, really, when you look at how the draft went. And, you know, not that I remember these names, but just looking at back up, Tyquan Thornton was jumped. He jumped three or four guys that most people had him behind. So the Patriots took Tyquan Thornton at 50. George Pickens went to the Steelers at 52. Alec Pierce out of Cincinnati went to the Colts at 53. And Sky Moore, a kid from Western Michigan, went to the Chiefs at 54. So those are the three guys. You know, it's sort of like, not to cross sports, but it's like keeping an eye on Matthew Barzell, Sebastian Aho, yeah, and, you know, Thomas Chabot. It's like, you know, you took Zach Senishin over who? And then you follow those guys. These are the three guys you're going to be following. George Pickens in Pittsburgh, Alec Pierce with the Colts, Sky Moore with the Chiefs. And if, you know, if your guy doesn't hit and those do, oh boy, you know, Bill's going to be long gone by that point, I think. I don't know. It's going to take 3 or 4 years to figure out. Maybe Bill will still be here. I don't know. But either way, don't just stop at George Pickens. Pierce, Sky Moore, and those guys, Pierce and Sky Moore, also belong on the list. And we're going to be comparing back and forth this entire way. What's so funny?
Well, I love doing that.
No, I just think this is, I like the odds of the field being right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Right. Listen, when it comes
three
to,
of them.
When it comes to second guessing Belichick and bashing the Patriots, why limit yourself, Murray? Why just pick the one guy? Broaden the field. We should not just stop. But in all seriousness, I mean, there was a run, right? And you led the run. There were receivers that went at 50, 52, 53, and 54. And they were all, so those four guys were grouped together. You had the first crack, and you took the guy that was pretty much consensus, the fourth of the four. And you took him first before any of those four. Let's turn him into a first round pick, why don't we? Why don't we do that? So we can really play this. Like, you know, it's in the second round, but you are now in this tier of receivers. And you look at this tier, he was ranked at the bottom of that tier, and you picked him at the top of that tier. He's, all intents and purposes, a top pick. And we're not just stopping at one guy to compare him to, George Pickens. We got Pierce in Indy and Moore in Kansas City. What do you say? So now, see, now you've broadened your field. You've broadened your opportunity there, Murray.
Yeah. I don't like the way this is setting up for the Patriots. I don't. I mean, really, again, when you look at it, four receivers in the span of five picks. Like, oh, boy.
And they're the ones that came home with the right one? I don't know. All right, there's a Patriots thought for you. We are bemoaning the state of the Red Sox, how they should be better, how this past weekend should have been what we could expect over the final 45 games, final 2 months of the season. But because the GM's a wuss and the players quit, you're kind of playing out the string, which sucks. It wouldn't have taken that much from either side, either the GM or the players. To get what you had over the weekend against the Yankees down the stretch. So that's really our big thing. We're also following up on the Patriots. So your calls on whatever you want, 617-779-0985. There are a couple open lines. Grab them. We'll get right to you off the top of the hour. First, an update from Murray. No commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.